Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Adventures of a Mom Patriot Talk Show. I am the producer and host, Serena Morrison, and we air live every Thursday from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and we aim to bring you interesting guests that are entrepreneurs and that are definitely movers and shakers in the country. We have a guest that is trying to get through right now. His name is Jeffrey McQueen. He's the person that developed the Second Revolution Flat. And it looks like Blog Talk Radio is giving me a hard time again this week. And he's not going to be able to, he's trying to dial in. So let me just give you some show background. If you want to follow us on Facebook, please follow us at Adventures of a Mom Patriot Talk Show. That's Adventures of a Mom Patriot Talk Show on Facebook. We appreciate all likes. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at A Mom Patriot on Twitter. We definitely will keep you up to date with upcoming guests through Twitter, and we aim to inform you about some of the things that are happening in the country. The goal of the Adventures of a Mom Patriot Talk Show started over a year ago. Wow, coming up on 2 years. And basically we want to spotlight conversations in our communities. We want people to reach out to their neighbors and develop relationships with our neighbors, not based on political affiliation, but based on community. And find out what your neighbors are thinking. They might just be as frustrated as you are with what's going on with the economy and everything. And, you know, they might be tempted to throw things at their TV when they're watching the news. So walking your neighborhood and offering a listening ear and trying to find out the heartbeat of what's happening is the best way to develop a relationship with your neighbors. We have a call. Jeffrey, did you make it through?
I made it through. Sorry about it. Sorry about not being there a little earlier.
No problem. I want to introduce everybody to you. This is Jeffrey McQueen. He's fascinating character. We had a great conversation the other day, and I want our listeners to get to know you a little bit. Are you still living in Rochester, Michigan?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Awesome. How's it going? How's the economy going up there right now?
Still struggling. You know, I think like most of America, the only new jobs seem to be part-time jobs around the country right now.
Right. Well, you actually have a great story, but what I usually ask all my guests, so the first question I ask them is, what inspired you to get involved in your community and get involved like you've been involved in the Patriot movement? So I want to give our listeners just a little bit of background about what inspired you.
Well, in 2009, I got laid off in the auto industry, and I saw the Tea Parties, you know, forming, and I wanted to join, and so I thought, you know, I wanted to go to one of the events, and I wanted to carry a flag, and I saw a lot of people carrying the Gadsden Don't Tread on Me yellow flag, and with the snake on it, but when I went online to buy one, it seemed like they were all made in China, and that didn't seem right to me to protest, you know, for my constitutional rights with a Chinese-made flag, so I basically contacted a friend of mine who knew a flag manufacturer in Texas and asked him if, you know, they could take Betsy Ross's flag of the first American Revolution and add a Roman numeral 2 to it, which I thought would be a great symbol to send a message to the media and to the politicians nationwide.
Yeah, it's kind of like a grassroots, you know, reminder that we're the ones that with the voting power to remove the politicians and hopefully replace them with statesmen.
Well, and I thought of, you know, we could write something, you know, write an incredible thing like, you know, Thomas Paine wrote Common Sense and, you know, shook up the nation. But I thought, you know, typically, politically, you know, for a new political movement to get some traction, it was going to need a new symbol. And also, I thought, you know, something that resonated historically would help that symbol move. But it had to be something easy enough to understand at a distance that people didn't have to really think about what does it mean, you know.
Right. A few years back, a friend of mine gave me a lapel pin, and basically it's round, and it's got a blue background with the Betsy Ross stars, the design with the Roman numeral 2 in it. And you know, when you're wearing that, you can it's kind of classy, too. You can wear it around, and it's a conversation starter. So I really like that. I like that design. And something that we talked about, too, that Roman numeral 2 is starting to mean different things to different people. You wanna go into that?
Yeah, it was pretty exciting when I went to the 9/12 march in D.C., the first 9/12 march. The president of the Gun Owners of America came up to me and introduced himself and said, you know, hey, I want to know where I can get one of those Second Amendment flags. And so he saw the Roman numeral 2 as a symbol of the Second Amendment. And later on that afternoon, the chief of the fire department from New York City, who was there, you know, commemorating 9/11, came over and asked me where he could get one of the Twin Tower flags because he saw the Roman numeral 2 as a symbol of the Twin Towers. So it seemed to pick up a lot of meaning for a lot of people.
Right. Well, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, you know, unfortunately, history isn't taught as thoroughly, and hasn't been taught as thoroughly to past generations as I would like to, because I'm a firm believer in, you know, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. But you know, Flag Day is June 14th, and it commemorates the flag's complicated history, because it wasn't until what, 1777. That the Continental Congress, like, wrote down a description of what the flag should be?
Well, that's just it. And, you know, basically with this flag, I thought, you know, it would be based in our history. But I also tell people that our flag has a deeper meaning because, you know, with the 2 and the 13 stars, there's two times in history that 13 came together for all mankind. The first time was the Last Supper, of course, where they created a faith on a foundation of love. And the second was, you know, when 13 colonies came together and wrote a constitution, you know, framed in freedom. So with a foundation of love framed in freedom, I believe, you know, the ultimate symbol is, you know, the House of Liberty, you know, with a foundation of love framed in freedom. And that's kind of the way, one of the deeper meanings of our flag with the 2 and 13 is to remind us, you know, what we're fighting for.
Yeah, and a lot of people are visual, and they need, like, a visual symbol to move them towards activism. Are you noticing, you know, for the past year or so or a couple of years, the media has been trying to promote the false narrative that the Tea Party is dead. Most of us that have been involved are like, no, we basically just pulled ourselves off of waving flags off the side of the road and started really working within our communities. And you know, there's nothing wrong with waving flags, but I love that. And it's a pretty powerful message to remind people that we're still around. But what I'm seeing is sort of like a metamorphosis into patriots getting involved and actually running for office and teaching people and our children the message of liberty. Are you seeing that move?
Huge. And, of course, you know, here in Michigan, we're the home of Hillsdale College, which has really gotten a lot of media press since the beginning of the Tea Party for a lot of, you know, what they've done as far as online education on the Constitution and, you know, basically trying to get that message out. And Hillsdale's been really kind of at the forefront of taking no federal funding for anything it does. And therefore, it's, you know, not, you know, restricted by the federal government by what it can teach, which has, you know, been pretty innovative for a number of years.
Yeah, and for our home educators out there, it's a great free resource for your children to be learning the Constitution. And I just want to mention, anybody that's listening to us on the podcast or are listening to us live, you don't have to break out a pen and pencil to take notes. If you go to our Facebook page, Adventures of a Mom Patriot Talk Show, I put up the links that we're discussing on each show there. So I'll definitely include a link to the Hillsdale College as well. And Jeffrey, you have a website. You want to refer our listeners to that? That's also up on Facebook as well.
Yeah, it's a really easy one. It's usrevolution2.com, and it's the number 2. So it's just usrevolution2.com. That's where people go to order the flag. And I started that website just after I created the flag and basically launched it in June 11, 2009. And in 14 days, I had orders from all 50 states. And it was amazing, how this flag took off.
Well, you have some other great products on there, too. You have T-shirts and all kinds of neat stuff that for everybody to get involved.
Well, and when it was kind of fun, too, because when we saw people, complaining about In God We Trust, and when they took it off the new dollar coins, then they ended up putting it back on the new dollar coins. It was kind of funny because I thought, it made me angry enough that I said, well, that's it. And I started offering T-shirts that say In God We Trust because, we ought to be fighting for our Constitution and for our, constitutional rights and also, for the traditions of our country.
Right.
Contrary to what a lot of people believe.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was saying, contrary to what a lot of people believe, we are a Christian nation, and we were founded on Judeo-Christian beliefs, and our forefathers, based a lot of, their early writings on that.
Well, they were escaping the oppression of the Church of England, and they understood that there shouldn't be a state, a government religion. So that's why they based it on freedom of religion. And I think a lot of people get that confused with, the whole discussion of separation of church and state, that kind of thing. And they get a little confused on what the founders meant by that.
No, but we've seen a real heavy-handed trend towards oppressing a lot of the churches and basically telling them that their, nonprofit status can be revoked if they speak out against, oppressive, governments or, the current Obama regime. And that's where I think there's going to be a backlash eventually, where a lot of people are going to start asking their ministers, if they aren't already, why aren't you talking about any of this? What kind of minister are you? Because, there's a special place in hell for people that are quiet during times of moral crisis. And if this isn't a moral crisis, what is?
Well, that's actually very interesting, because that's a conversation I've been having with quite a few people, that they seem to want to write laws to legislate, legislate social and morality issues. And my question to them is, I see their activism in that way, but I would rather them, challenge their churches and their church leadership into being, actively engaged in the community and reaching out to people and starting conversations and telling them why they believe and what they believe. Because I think where we're losing it is in the family homes and in our churches, because they're afraid of either offending somebody in the pew or the tax status. The government.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, we've seen, the black families in America decimated by the liberal policies, since the 1960s. And to be honest, I don't think that should be tolerated. I think there's a lot of, things that we could do to turn around, what's been happening in the black community and, basically inspire people to be more, what I think are, our creator intended for us, You know, and it's really amazing that, you know, the party that's out there trying to, be the party that hands out everything to everybody has really been the one that's really torn apart a lot of, the social fabric of this nation.
Right. I mean, I grew up in the Church of Christ, and I remember being a kid, and my mom would work in the office as a secretary, and they would have families come in, and there was a pantry there if they needed help, and it was more, that was how the church was ministering to the community as well, and they would have clothes for the kids, or if a teenager found herself in a situation where she was pregnant or whatever, they would show love to that person and then try to set them up with a family to adopt their child or just love and support as opposed to, yelling at somebody or having the government hand out everything. I think we've moved away from our churches being caretakers of the community, and instead we're writing a check to the government and expecting them to do it all. That's kind of sad.
No, I agree, and that's where I feel that a lot of the ministers of these churches have stopped, they're no longer shepherds, and when they don't speak out, during times of moral crisis, then basically, I feel that, the churches themselves are floundering. And that's why I think a lot of people have left a lot of the churches, because they don't feel that their churches have the moral courage to do and to say what needs to be said.
Right. Well, and I was reading somewhere, because I think every year, once a year, there are, I think, and it keeps growing exponentially, there are churches that get together and they tape the sermon where the preacher or the pastor or the rabbi or whatever preaches about, the importance of elections or whatever it is. They tape it and they actually send it to the IRS and basically challenge them to come after them. And it's been going on for almost, I think, 10 years now, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the last I've read, the IRS actually hasn't gone after anyone yet. It's just that underlying fear.
Exactly, and that's why, I don't know if you remember the Elian Gonzalez issue where there was this young Cuban boy where the father was fighting to have him extradited to be brought back to Cuba, and the mother, had been, fighting to help him stay in the United States. And, I don't know, Janet Reno and, a bunch of guys dressed up, basically in their black outfits, looking like a bunch of stormtroopers came in and, took the kid from the home. And this is an opportunity where I would have said, since this is a Catholic family, what they could have done is taken the kid to the local Catholic church and asked for sanctuary. And, I think that would have really created a situation where the federal government would have had to stand down because they couldn't go in and raid a Catholic church, because that would have caused a global outcry of, basically, fascism versus, the church.
Well, and I was inspired when Timothy Dolan, he's feisty. I really like him. When he came out, through the Affordable Care Act, AKA Obamacare, where they're requiring tax dollars to, basically require private companies and even churches that are running hospitals, which are basically becoming very rare these days because they're not able to do it. Requiring them to do things that are against their religion. So I was very inspired when they started coming out very loudly about that, but it kind of died down. Have you heard anything lately about it?
No, not too much, actually, but I'm hoping that we're going to see, more people in their churches, talking to their ministers. And I'm one of them because I, you know, the church I've been attending, you know, has been talking about everything but what's going on. And I think, you know, somebody needs to, you know, and I think it's going to be me, is to start to talk to them and say, look, you know, we can hide in the corner and try to protect the nonprofit status, or we can get out there and start to lead, because this is a very scary time for a lot of people.
Well, and it doesn't really necessarily have to be, and stick with me here for a minute, it doesn't necessarily have to be a Republican versus Democrat versus Libertarian thing. I mean, everybody, I mean, half my family are what you would call blue dog Democrats. They're, you know, they're very conservative, and much like the Tea Party and the Patriot Movement has been trying to basically encourage the Republican Party to come more towards the Constitution, I'd like to see people that feel more comfortable in the Democrat Party or even the Libertarian Party to just step up. If you want to stay there, step up and take a stand and say, look, I'm a registered Democrat, or I'm a registered Libertarian or whatever, and this is what I believe, and I think we should bring the party closer to this route. Because in my opinion, almost, and I know there's some stark differences, but it's almost like they get elected to office, and the R's and the D's get up there, and they go in the back rooms, and they make deals, and nobody knows what's happening, and they're almost like one party. Does that make sense to you?
Actually, it makes a lot of sense, and that's where I think a lot of people are waking up and realizing that, you know, Team R and Team D have really been representing the federal government and the growth of the federal government, and they left the people a long time ago, and a lot of the problems we have right now is, I think a lot of people on both, you know, that would call themselves Democrats, and people that are previously Republicans are now looking at this and saying, you know, these guys don't represent us anymore. It's really we the people versus the federal government. And that's what's
right.
Happening now. These guys, there's, with the exception of a few in the Republican Party, like, you know, Cruz and, you know, I think, you know, Daryl Issa, some of these guys, Rand Paul, really are trying to basically differentiate themselves by standing with the Constitution, where there's other Republicans like Boehner and, you know, Lindsey Graham that have basically trying to do whatever they can to protect the growth of the federal government and to appease, you know, the people that have the New World Order agenda. And a lot of Democrats who saw a lot of their, you know, Fourth Amendment rights trampled with the recent NSA scandal, I think they're starting to wake up and realize that this guy that they put in office has more power than Hitler did. And
right. Well, Congress is complicit with them. I mean, they're not even standing up or doing anything about it. So.
Well, but some are starting to say this is outrageous. Even some of the media starting to say what the heck's going on here, because this isn't the Democratic Party of our grandfathers, that fought for unions and fought for, you know, a living wage. I mean, look what's under Obama. We've not only left the 40-hour work week, but now we've gone to minimum wage, you know, jobs with, you know, part-time jobs. And basically, you see, you know, the middle class is being attacked. It's under attack now more than ever before. If you look at the, you know, New World Order that's been discussed by the John Birch Society since the 60s, you know, one of their biggest fears was that, you know, one day the financial institutions of the United States would be collapsed under some rogue regime, and that would sweep in this huge crisis, and the result would be that the people would demand that the federal government fix the problem that the federal government created. And that's like asking an arsonist to put out your fire.
Right. What is Einstein's quote? Something about relying on the thinking that got you in the problem in the first place? It's ridiculous.
Exactly. Albert Einstein said, if you do the same thing over and over again, you know, don't expect different results.
Right.
And, you know, basically by voting for the same people over and over again. And, you know, our taxes go up, you know, our freedoms diminish. And when you look at what happened in 9/11, you know, with the attack of the Twin Towers, the Pentagon, and the crash of the, you know, plane out in Pennsylvania, you know, we saw sweeping reforms in our freedoms and our liberties to the point where, you know, it's no longer fun going to an airport because it's just a mess trying to get through there. And even Benjamin Franklin said, look, if you're willing to trade your liberty for safety, then perhaps you don't, you know, you don't deserve either.
Right.
And that's the point at which I'm at. You know, if you know, our government can't guarantee protecting, you know, the American citizen, which is their number one responsibility, then maybe we need a new federal government and we'll just start, you know, basically getting rid of the people that can't do what they say, you know, what they've been hired to do.
Well, and that's what's inspired me in my local area. And that's why I kind of get a kick out of what I actually got a kick out of was when the media was saying, oh, the Tea Party is dying. Now, I've got a lot of friends that are like national leaders, and I knew in the background, we knew years ago that the IRS was just pounding them and not approving their 501c3 status. And what people don't recognize is that we ran out of money, and there's very few people that will donate to a group unless you have that status, because they almost think that it legitimizes you. You see what I'm, you know where I'm going with this?
Well, absolutely, and I think a big part of, you know, going through and targeting these guys and delaying, you know, their movement to, you know, tax-free status was to basically take a lot of the financial wind out of the sail of you know, Romney and the Tea Party, because, you know, this was basically nothing other than campaign manipulation. They were out there basically trying to take the wind out of the sails of the whole movement by depleting their ability to raise money. Because in a campaign season, your ability to raise money determines whether you're going to win or you're losing. And on top of that, you know, this wasn't just a single attack. They had a multi-pronged strategy for this attack. And the other part of that strategy was bringing in the voting machines in the Pennsylvania and Ohio, which they knew were going to be key states. And those voting machines were supplied by a company out of Spain called Seidel. And Seidel is owned by George Soros. And those machines were reported in a number of different media outlets, switching votes from Romney to Obama. And in a lot of the 90-some percent of the districts, they were showing, you know, the voters were voting, over 100% of the registered voters were voting for Obama, which is statistically impossible. It means
right.
That, you know, more people than were registered were voting, which meant that there was a lot of voter fraud. And this is where a lot of us are wise enough, I think, to know that that's what this whole voter ID issue is about. Because if you don't have, in fact, if you look at where Obama won, he won in states where there was no voter ID laws. And that's why, you know, the Democratic, you know, the establishment of the Democratic Party, the leadership, wants to get rid of voter ID laws. And that's why, you know, they're fighting this tooth and nail right now, because they know they can cheat in any state where there's no voter ID.
Well, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this, and I should have looked it up, and I'll mention it on another show, but there was some kind of deal made with the Voting Rights Act that the Republican Party signed away their rights to challenge any election. In fact, you know, we have, I always mix him up with Batman. We have Alan West, and what happened on the east coast of Florida. And there was just so many reports of potential fraud, and then all of a sudden ballots were found. And this is when the story was brought up that because there were a lot of people, there was quite a few people in Florida that were demanding the Republican Party of Florida to, you know, demand an investigation. And that's when this came down. It was some kind of backroom deal between the Republicans and the Democrats that for something to do with the Voting Rights Act, that the Republicans signed their rights away to challenge an election on voter fraud.
Well, and that's why, you know, everybody who's listening to your program out there, I think if the Republicans don't stand up now when they have a chance to defund Obamacare or, you know, the Affordable Health Care Act or whatever you want to call it, if they don't stand up now and defund Obamacare, personally, I'm pledging right now I will never vote Republican again, because the way we get out of that agreement, the secret agreement between the Democrats and the Republicans, is that, you know, I'm sorry, but I think we're going to have to go third party. And to be honest, I've searched my soul and tried to fight this tooth and nail, because I know that the minute we create a third party, we could end up splitting the Republican Party. But I'm tired of people not taking, you know, a moral stand and
right.
trying to come up with some compromise. But when you have a choice between good and evil, you don't sit there and try to come up with something in the middle, especially when, you know, the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness of our future generations is at stake. So,
well,
and that's where...
in all honesty, Jeffrey, I have been a registered Republican since 1989. For the last 5 years, I have watched my friends in the Patriot Movement get shut out and beat up and diminished by the local Republican Party in my county, and I was over it. And so in April of this year, I actually, with much thought, I changed my party affiliation to Libertarian, and I have found more inspiration in dealing with those grassroots people and learning about, you know, where they are and where they're going. This isn't a promotion for the Libertarian Party, but I will tell you that they are more accepting to and listening to people about where their concerns are than any Republican club that I've ever been to.
Well, not only that, but I've been to a lot of the Libertarian meetings too, and Libertarian Party meetings, and what's really amazing to me is the number of young people that are getting it, that they're going to be saddled with this huge tax burden that, you know, basically the Democratic Party and Obama are trying to dump on them with the help of a lot of the leadership of the Republican Party that have no spine. And these kids are saying, you know, the heck with this. You know, first of all, you know, you're going to saddle us with, you know, this health care, you know, Obamacare that you're trying to dump on us by making us pay all these huge premiums when typically, you know, we're at our healthiest years and we're not going to need, you know, medical care for the majority of us. But, yeah, we're going to end up paying for, you know, everybody else. And, you know, a lot of these kids can't even find a job right now because the economy has been so depressed by the policies of the current administration. And to be honest, a lot of people think that Obama has done this because he's incompetent and he doesn't know how to fix things. And the reality is, you know, we know what causes a good economy to grow and we know what causes the economy to collapse and what, you know, basically those policies are. And there's no longer any debate. This isn't an art. This is really science at this point. It's math, simple math. And the reality is they're doing whatever they can right now on the Obama administration to collapse this, you know, country. And I think the only reason they're not doing it faster is because it would cause people to rush into the streets.
Right. Well, in Florida, and go back to your point of being afraid of splitting the Republican Party, in Florida we've got a candidate for governor that's running on the Libertarian ticket. And sort of something interesting, you may know this. We have a Republican governor currently, and his supposed challenger that hasn't announced officially yet, but he's all over the place, was our previous Republican governor that ran against Marco Rubio and switched to independent, and now he's supposedly going to run on the Democrat ticket in 2014 for governor. So we've got... And Adrian Wiley is the Libertarian candidate that's running for governor, and for the first time ever, he was a Libertarian candidate for a statewide office, was included in a a statewide scientific poll, and he polled at almost 9% with 21% undecided. And they broke it down, and he was polling almost evenly from the Republicans and the Democrats. So it's like people are waking up. They're like, okay, done with those two parties. you guys keep working together for whatever you're doing, and I'm going to go with Liberty. So.
Well, and I think that's the American people, and that's why, you know, I'm not quick to vilify people that are Democrats, and I'm not out there to vilify anybody that, you know, has been, you know, voting Republican their whole life. So what I'm asking people to look at is, you know, basically, who are we? And the reality is, we're Americans first. When our founding fathers built this country, they didn't want political parties. In fact, they were angry when some of the other founding fathers talked about setting up political parties. And the answer that Thomas Jefferson gave them was, you know, why would we consider political parties and starting political parties? Why would you rip a country apart when you just put it together? And, you know, and that's, you know, basically their thoughts. We are, first of all, Americans. And what
right.
basically makes us greater than any other country in the world is, you know, that we've come from all different countries from around the world with different cultures, languages, races, religions. And this has been the place where there's opportunities. But it's been based on, you know, with a foundation of, you know, Judeo-Christian beliefs. But the minute you, you know, basically come into this country and try to do things with, you know, Sharia law and, you know, try to start redistributing the wealth and trying to, you know, basically take, you know, the personal private property of people and give it to somebody else under the guise of being, you know, we're the federal government and we're here to help. I mean, it's just the same kind of tyranny that we left in England, you know, for the first American Revolution.
Right. Well, and I mean, like I said, there's just so many inspirations that I see all over the country. For example, the congressional district I live in is represented by the longest serving GOP congressional representative in office. He's been there almost 43 years, and he's actually being challenged by a libertarian in 2014. And you know, I met him soon after the last election. He invited a bunch of people, activists, over because he wanted to start a community movement to educate people how to get out into their neighborhoods and inspire their neighbors and talk to them, not on a party basis, but on a liberty-minded basis, and try to, you know, build relationships and teach people what liberty means so that they can yearn for it. Because once you've learned about it and it's in your blood, you can't go back. It's kind of like the Matrix.
Yeah.
Once you take the red pill, you can't go back.
Exactly. And that's, you know, a lot of, you know, what I think, you know, our founding fathers, you know, our forefathers, they knew the difference between, you know, liberty and tyranny. And I think a lot of the people that have come to this country, even in the last, you know, few years, knew the difference between, you know, liberty and tyranny, because a lot of people even today are fleeing countries that are very tyrannical to come to America for the chance to live without worrying about who's knocking on their door late at night.
Right. Well, in Florida, we've got a large Cuban, and I've got several dear friends that are, they don't like it when they're called Cuban Americans. They are Americans, but they are Americans with from Cuban descent is where I want to go with that. But they are panicked because they're like, wait. We left Castro, and now what are you guys doing? So they're very patriotic, and they get it, you know.
Well, exactly, and I see a lot of Eastern Europeans up here in the auto industry in Detroit area, and a lot of them, you know, have come here from, you know, Bulgaria And they've come over here from East Germany, and they're all wondering what the heck's going on. You know, we left, you know, these, you know, countries of Romania, Bulgaria, and the former Soviet Union, and now we're over here, and you guys want to go back, you know, to that, you know, kind of stuff. And it's outrageous. You know, they want to know what's going on. But I think at the end of the day, this is why I think Americans will not stand for this. And I think we're coming to a point where, you know, there's going to be some sort of a spark where either we have a second American Revolution or, you know, enough people wake up and start to do what I hope they would do, which is get to the voting box. Because I tell everybody there's only one, you know, four boxes we can use when we're trying to change things politically in this country. And one of them is the soapbox. We can get up and tell everybody, you know, what needs to be changed. Or we can go to the ballot box and vote for a change. And if that doesn't work, then we need to sue for change and go to the jury box and go to the courts and try to get things changed. But at the end of the day, if there's no other choice left, then the only box left is the bullet box. And that's what protects us, the Second Amendment, which keeps us free. And that's what scares the federal government and why I think there's a lot of movement to try to restrict that Second Amendment. And, you know, because they're worried that, you know, we have the largest standing army here in the United States of any place in the world, and probably more weapons out there available.
Well, and wasn't it the Japanese premier said there was no way they were going to come in onto the continental U.S. because everybody was hiding behind a tree with a gun or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty accurate. But, you know, the other thing is, you know, the New World Order guys are hoping, you know, that they can bring in a standing army or get other Americans to stand against Americans. And I don't see that happening either. You know, because it just couldn't happen. And I don't see Americans standing, you know, toe-to-toe with other foreign armies. I think, you know, Americans are smart enough to say, the heck with us. We're not going to fight, you know, these guys that you put in uniform. We'll go fight the guys that are leading them. And so, you know, there used to be in the old days, they called it chivalry. When you didn't shoot the leaders, you went after the, you know, soldiers. But I don't think that's how this, you know, our American Revolution, the first one, was fought, because it was a guerrilla war. It wasn't,
right.
You know,
well,
the American. What's that?
Well, and it was also, you know, based on being overtaxed and like a consumer revolution, which, and I want to just add one more box to your analogy. And because I've been working with Made in the USA Certified, my company, Citizen Voice Project, we're an affiliate of theirs, and I'm working in across all kinds of political ideologies with like the food labeling movement, and much like yourself, when you went to search for a flag that was made in the USA, it's becoming a grass fire. Because consumers, we don't need the government government can't build jobs. But if we empower ourselves with our dollar that's being worth less and less every day, but if we demand that our stores carry, you know, certified made in USA products, then we give the consumer the power to vote with their wallet and put Americans to work. And feel good about it. So that's why I'm inspired, because I'm just watching this Made in the USA Certified. It's just catching on like grass fire, because it's easy to do. All you do is you go in the store and you say, hey, I shop here regularly, and my family wants to buy products that are made by USA families. So we can get back to work. We don't need the government to do that.
No, and that's part of why, you know, ethnic communities in the United States, you know, were kind of, that's how America was built, in having, you know, German towns and Chinatowns and, you know, Polish villages or whatever, because a lot of people moving here knew that once they got in here, they stayed amongst themselves, they traded amongst themselves, and that helped their community grow and become more prosperous. And
right.
Europe's like that a lot, too. When you go to Germany, you don't see a lot of Italian cars all over Germany. You see mostly German cars. And when you go to Italy, you see mostly Italian cars. And then you go over to France, and it's almost all French cars. You know, but here in America, we've got everybody's cars. You know, and if we started, you know, looking at things as to where are we buying things, but not only that, where are the profits going? It would change a lot of the landscape as far as, you know, the wealth. And that's why in the 50s we saw a huge period of people with a lot of, you know, wealth, you know, between the 50s and the 70s. But from the 70s on, we saw the federal government growing to an astronomical size where it started sucking a lot of that wealth out of the people through hidden ways like inflation.
Right. I remember being a kid, and there were certain days that we'd have to go down and wait in line. This was back in the 70s, and my dad's, 73 Datsun station wagon, bright orange, by the way, and just waiting in line, and the gas prices were astronomical back then, but now I laugh because, you know, they were, 40 cents a gallon?
Right, exactly.
But that's when the dollar was worth more, too.
Well, exactly, and it's amazing because, you know, here in America, I think we still have a lot of patriotic people and a lot of, you know, good people on both sides that are, you know, that might still today call themselves Democrats that know that there's something wrong here. Especially, I mean, look at the unions right now that thought they were getting such a great deal, you know, with Obama coming into office. And now they've started to realize that this Obamacare not only has ripped and shredded the 40-hour work week, but it's now starting to, you know, hurt their ability, and they're taking away a lot of their health care and forcing them into the government plan, and now the unions all want out of it, you know, on top of that, they're seeing, you know, their phone mails or their phones and their emails being tracked by the NSA. You know, I'm sorry, but, you know, the Democrat Party, you know, far and wide is not a socialist party. You know, there is a big socialist element in the Democratic Party, but I think there's a lot of good blue dog Democrats in the American Party that still love the American way of life and will fight for it.
I was at a meeting one time, and once again, it was that meeting that I referred to with this person that wanted to inspire communities to get together, and who we ended up talking into running for Congress against our congressman. But there was a wide array of different people there, and there was a young lady that was attending, and she was with the Socialist Party, and this was in the beginning when I wasn't really good at biting my tongue, and what she was saying, I just kept going back to Ayn Rand, and I was like, oh, wow, have you read Atlas Shrugged? It just popped out of my mouth. I said, have you read Atlas Shrugged? And she looks at me and she goes, that's science fiction. I'm like, maybe 50 years ago it was, but... And then I immediately realized they needed to be quiet and listen. And what he said to her really resonated with me. He goes, I don't have a problem with socialism as long as it's not mandated by the government. So, for example, if you want to go out and start a commune or you want to have a community garden, and that's your decision, and you decide amongst a bunch of families that you want to do that, that should be free to do in the country, but it should no way be government mandated or required. And I was like, what a cool way to look at it.
Right. Exactly. So, and, you know, there are groups that are socialist in nature. I mean, like the Amish community, but, you know, that's their choice, you know, and they're very peaceful and, you know, they're part of the American culture, you know, but the reality is, you're right. Anytime the federal government gets involved in something, then it no longer becomes a choice that somebody would make, you know, freely. And
right.
That's where, it becomes tyrannical and your liberty is taken away. And you know, even I'm starting to see a lot of, you know, people in the black community, you know, leaders, new leaders coming out now that are starting to speak out against, you know, what the federal government and the Democratic Party's policies have done to decimate the black family in America. And for me, this is truly inspiring to see that people are starting to wake up in the black community and realize that these people that were handing them everything were basically not teaching them, you know, how to basically fend for themselves. And, you know, basically, I think a lot of the Democratic Party has almost been like, you know, the overindulgent parents of teenagers that try to hand their teenagers everything, and then when they get out of college or high school, expect the world to take care of them, and when it doesn't, you know, they revolt, you know?
Right.
And that's where, you know, I think a lot of ways, you know, the federal government is perhaps, you know, done more damage than anybody. But I think as Americans,
that's where it comes down to states starting to reassert their 10th Amendment rights. I mean, I'm watching, I'm not sure if you're watching, I keep watching the amendments just get crushed, and I'm waiting for the First Amendment to be total, and it's almost getting outlawed, and I'm like, you know, well, of course I have a talk show, and you can ask any of my friends, if the First Amendment ever gets, you know, outlawed, I'm going to end up in Gitmo, because there's just, when are we going to let it stop? I mean, when it keeps going, it's the Fifth Amendment and the Fourth Amendment, and it's the Second Amendment. We're just getting too dangerously close to the First Amendment.
Well, and that's where it's a lot of the fighting right now is going on in the what I call the jury box, because there's a lot of things going on, like Oklahoma that outlawed Sharia law. Now the federal government's trying to step in and, you know, overturn that. And, you know, this is a 10th Amendment issue. You know, and, you know, there's also other issues, you know, similar, you know, like the Voter ID Act, which, you know, basically a lot of people in the federal government forget that it's we, the states, that created the federal government, and we were here before there was a federal government. And we, the states, can dissolve the federal government, which is part of the Constitution, at any time, you know, if we find that that government no longer serves us. And especially if that government has become tyrannical. And we're at that point now where a lot of people are starting to wonder, are we there? You know, is it time? And if it is time, you know, we need to get either some backbone in our representatives, or it's time to clean house and get new representatives. And I think a lot of people right now in America are extremely patient and trying to work through the process to get things changed with the ballot box. But I pray that it doesn't, you know, basically melt down to the bullet box, because if they keep doing what they're doing and destroying this economy on purpose, and there's no question in my mind, this is not accidental. Because, like I said before, what they're doing to this economy is not bad policy, because they don't know any better. They know better. Anybody that's got a education in economics 101 knows that what they're doing economically is going to do nothing other than sink this economy.
Well, and any family has gone grocery shopping and has paid attention. I think about 6 years ago, my husband asks me when I come home how much I spent. And, you know, I started complaining. I'm like, my grocery basket is getting less and less full, and I'm spending more and more money. And it's the devaluation of our dollar, and it's just families are getting crushed with food prices and everything.
And it's happening quickly. I mean, just think of a basic sausage McMuffin with egg on. You know, for breakfast, it was $3.30 in 2009, and you can't get one. You know, it's like $6 now for the same, you know, Happy Meal. You know, it's doubled in price. And same thing with a lot of our food, you know, a lot of the food products that we're buying. And part of that, I think, is driven by people that feel that something is not right, which has created a whole new group of preppers out there that are, you know, starting to buy and store and hoard food and clothing and survival items that they feel that they may need if everything collapses, you know, under this government and this regime.
I have a lot of friends that have gotten into gardening, and I really would like to, but my thumb is still not green. But I mean, just the thought of having children that are hungry. I mean, if you look at what's happening in the Middle East, a lot of what started that was the, for example, I was told that the Egyptian people, the food prices were so outrageous that they were hungry. And if anybody has any recognition of what would happen if your children are hungry or whatever, and it, you go and you do whatever you can to get them food, and that's where you get, you know, civil unrest, and that's kind of scary.
No, I think that is kind of scary, but they're playing a very dangerous game right now, because if they create a situation where civil unrest starts to grow in this country or something, you know, causes, you know, that kind of a national movement like we've been seeing in the Middle East, you know, God help them, because, you know, what you see in the Middle East is nothing like what you would see here, because you're talking about civil unrest with an unarmed population versus civil unrest with an armed population.
Yeah.
And that's where,
the majority of the legal gun owners, I would go the way, way majority of the legal gun owners are very responsible. I mean, I'm going to go like 95% and up. It's just right. the ones that are illegal, you know, that I concern me. Because they'll be roaming the streets.
Exactly. But, I don't know, it's just we're living in very, very dangerous times right now. And, you know, I also, when I watch, you know, the news and I see, you know, people saying Obama this and Obama that, I mean, the way I look at it, and this goes back to our discussion about political parties, I think Obama is what I call a post turtle. You know, it's kind of like when you're driving out in, you know, Kansas and there's hundreds of miles of cornfields, and you look out on one of the fences and there's a turtle on top of a post, and you don't know how he got there. You know he doesn't belong there, and you know he didn't get there himself. And right. That's kind of what Obama is all about. He's a post turtle. He doesn't belong in the office of the presidency. He didn't get there himself. He was put in there by somebody who felt that he needed to be there for some agenda that they had. And he definitely didn't get there, you know, himself. But when you look at George Soros, who's been a big financial contributor to everything Obama and Obama's agenda, and then you look at the fact that he was also sending money to John McCain when John McCain was running for president in 2008 and funding a lot of John McCain's, you know, activities after the 2008 election, then you start to wonder, wait a minute, if the same guys are funding both sides, Republican and Democrat, then you got to wonder, you know, is there really two parties? Or are
right.
we just being played? And the only difference, I think... Pardon
me? I want to mention your website again, because that hour goes by very fast, especially with fascinating guests like yourself. I really appreciate you coming on. It's Jeffrey McQueen. And your Second Revolution flag, your website is listed on my Facebook page, Adventures of a Mom Patriot Talk Show. And your website is U.S. Revolution and then the number 2.com. And once again, I really appreciate you coming on. It's been a pleasure meeting you and talking with you, and I hope we can stay in touch.
Well, I think we will, and we'll definitely see each other, I'm sure, in Washington, D.C., and I've been trying to figure out when our next activity is going to be, because, you know, I think the more people that are getting involved now, and that's what I think is really encouraging, the number of people that I've seen around the country as I've traveled around the country that are waking up to what's going on, I think it's tremendous.
It is. And I'm inspired because I'm seeing a lot of local activism and people reaching out to their neighbors and bringing them in just to, you know, have a conversation with them. And it's there's the frustration is relieved because they stop listening to the media and they start listening and building friendships. So, Jeffrey McLean, I appreciate you being on.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity with you also. And thanks again for inviting me.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
I just want to give a
heads up, and we're going to go a little bit over, and I think it's still recording. I hope it is. Next week's guest is going to be Lucas Overby. He's a Libertarian candidate for the U.S. House District 13. He's running against the longest-serving GOP candidate in Congress. We talked about him earlier, who's been in office for going on 43 years. And you can find you'll be able to find his show announcement on my Facebook group page. It's Adventures of a Mom Patriot Talk Show. And I'm looking forward to next week. If you have any suggestions for guests that you'd like to have on the show, or if you are an entrepreneur or a mom or someone that's started a neat project in your neighborhood, please feel free to contact us through our Facebook page, and we'd love to have you on. Have a great week, everybody, and remember, it's conversations over confrontations. Get out there and talk to your neighbors and be inspired, because we the people are starting a conversation with our neighbors and building our country from the grassroots up.